Hello.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. Hey, Mike Malloy here. It is Thursday night, hour one of the Malloy Show. Glad you're here. Patty Lockard is our sponsor this first hour. She writes, Dear Mike, Nurse Talk Radio, where laughter is the best medicine, is proud to sponsor this hour of the Mike Malloy Show. Our show is sponsored by over 200,000 nurses, commonly known as National Nurses United and Massachusetts Nurses Association. Oh, and did we tell you it's really funny and edgy, too? You can find us at Nurse Talk Site, S-I-T-E, nursetalksite.com. So check us out. Thanks for keeping us on pins and needles every show. Just a quick question. Do you have a blood pressure cuff in your studio? Might want to invest in one. We love you. Of course I do. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Oh, yeah. No, I do BP checks. Probably, depends on how it's running. Twice a day. Thanks, Patty. Hey, check them out. Nurse Talk Site, S-I-T-E, nursetalksite.com. That's very sweet, being concerned about my blood pressure. It is, really is. Occupy arrests. On May Day, about 116 people were arrested at Occupy protests around the country. And since the Occupy movement began in New York on September 17th last, there have now been a minimum of 7,106 Occupy arrests in 114 cities across the U.S. This is according to OccupyArrests.com. OccupyArrests.com. Heidi Bogosian, who's director of the National Lawyers Guild and author of the forthcoming book, Spying on Democracy, Protest, and Dissent in the New Era of Government Surveillance. She said today, quote, the piling on of Occupy arrests can be seen as a barometer of this government's intolerance for the First Amendment. Aggressive policing tactics, including frequent gratuitous assaults on protesters and bystanders, are making our parks and streets hostile to the Constitution, end quote. Marina Citrin. She wrote a piece, May Day 2012, The Success Before It Began in the U.S. That piece states, quote, we succeeded before we began. May Day has been retaken in the United States. We are now again a part of the rest of the globe, where May Day is one where we celebrate our power, people's power, that of workers, precarious and unionized, immigrants and migrants, radicals of all sorts, from the anarchist to the democratic socialist. People around the world were talking about May Day in the U.S. before May Day began, and now those of us here in the U.S. have begun something new, something that is old and yet has been reinvented, the future of which is still being determined, as so many things are in our new movements. But the question is again posed, as with democracy and power. A couple of observations about Occupy from Institute for Public Accuracy. Their website is accuracy.org. 7,106 Occupy arrests. The statement that Heidi Bogosian of the National Lawyers Guild said, aggressive policing tactics are making our parks and streets hostile to the Constitution. Also, she says, she writes, the piling on of Occupy risk can be seen as a barometer of this government's intolerance for the First Amendment. I'm not trying to be a smartass here, but I would point out that these arrests are coming from city and county and sometimes state authorities, not from the federal government. The only time since all this began that I've been arrested by federal authorities is when we were on federal property. But when you are in downtown New York or uptown New York or San Francisco or L.A. or wherever, those arrests are being made by county sheriffs or local police or SWAT squads. They're local. They're not government forces. Now, I'm not trying to split hairs here. I just think that let's call it what it is. Now, you can extrapolate from that. That the administration, the Obama administration, cares not a whit about First Amendment rights. But if that were the case, and I'm not saying it isn't, I'm just tossing out some questions here. If that were the case, wouldn't it be obvious in that the Justice Department would bring some suits against protesters, or does it work the other way? The Justice Department defends people who have been who challenge local ordinances and laws up against the First Amendment. I just think that I think National Lawyers Guild is a superlative organization. I'm sure Heidi Boghossian, who is the director, is making a point that I'm missing, but I don't know that. It's correct to say that these arrests can be seen as a barometer of this government's intolerance of the First Amendment. Maybe it is. I don't know. Like I said, I am have just about been rendered incapable of making observations and deciding whether or not what I'm seeing is real or not real, true or not true. I don't know. I would say that it's proof that the, not necessarily in this instance, that this government is antagonistic towards the First Amendment, but that corporate power in the various cities where these arrests are occurring are intolerant of First Amendment rights. No? You don't think so? You think it's all coming from the Obama administration? I have some problems with that, but that's all right. Like I said, I have problems with everything right now. Nothing makes any sense to me anymore. Did you hear about the top Environmental Protection Agency official in Texas? He's been forced to resign because the right-wing media in this country went after him. This is happening with alarming regularity. It really is. I'm shocked at the ease. I'm shocked by the ease that right-wing crazy people can get government officials removed, fired, or forced to resign. I'm really surprised for it. It's very Hitlerian. It's very, very, very brown shirtish. And this guy's the latest. Al Armendariz, is that his, I guess. He oversaw federal environment enforcement laws in five states. He offered his resignation Sunday in a letter to Lisa Jackson, EPA administrator. I'll tell you what happened. You probably already know about it, but I'll go through it when we come back. Stay with us.
Fire, we call that the friends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Now, look, I don't want to open a can of worms about Obama and the First Amendment, the Obama administration. I'm not here to say that Barack Obama is a great defender of the First Amendment when it involves protesting in the streets. That's not what I said. I have a bit of a disagreement, though, with the head of the National Lawyers Guild. Again, I'll just state the case as clearly as I can. The arrests are being conducted by local police. They are not being, there are no charges being filed. Now, that may seem like kind of a wishy-washy response, but, you know, I am willing to put as much as possible on Barack Obama for not doing the things that he said he would do. I really am. I am not an Obama supporter from a political point of view. I don't know what he deals with. I have no idea. But I think the laws regarding Occupy are being enforced in order to placate corporate interests, and they're being enforced on the local level. If the National Lawyers Guild wants to do this, and I think it's a good idea, take up the case of one of these people, or 10, or 1,000, or 5,000 of them, based on infringement of First Amendment protections, and sue the police department of New York, or wherever. So that's all. I'm not defending this government's actions or inactions. I just question that statement by the head of the National Lawyers Guild. Anyway, top EPA official in Texas resigned over a 2-year-old video circulated by the usual right-wing bastards in this country of a speech that he gave where he said that the EPA should hit polluters with its full powers. And he cited the Roman practice of crucifying enemies as a deterrent. See, you dare not use hyperbole or metaphor with these sons of bitches on the right wing, because then it becomes, they're incapable. Right wingers are incapable to tell the difference. So they seize on the words because they are all cowardly, stupid sons of bitches, every single right-winger in this country, whether it's an office holder or one of these bloggers or somebody who votes or follows the right wing or listens to Limbaugh or the murderous Glenn Beck. It doesn't make any difference. Trying to get them to understand nuance or metaphor or simile or anything beyond absolute literalness is impossible. They cannot. Their brains are not capable of understanding this. On the other hand, when the complaints, when the right-wingers then start the screaming and stomping their feet and farting in the wind and yelling and yelping and entering in that huge feedback loop that eventually gets picked up by Fox, the Murdoch Terror broadcast organization, all of a sudden, the officials in Washington pee their pants, the Democrats, they're so afraid of showing some spine and some backbone and taking these stories and just batting them away as if they were some stinking flying roach. But no. So when the very single-minded right-wingers, this destructive force that is just loping right along, and they all just play hell with the system until they die, until they have heart attacks and die. And then they go to hell, and they discover, oops, So the deal here, Al Armendariz, I cannot pronounce his name. I'll just go with Al A. Al A, who oversaw federal environment enforcement of five states, offered his resignation. Lisa Jackson accepted it. Senior agency officials had red-assed Dr. Armendariz, who holds a doctorate in environmental engineering, for what they called his, quote, inappropriate and inaccurate comments about the agency's enforcement policy. Oh, for Christ's sake. I mean, oh, my goodness. It's inappropriate to say we crucify. Well, nobody said you did, Miss Jackson. But anyway, she accepted his resignation Monday because it had become clear that Republicans intended to continue to pound on this guy and use him as ammunition in their conflict with the Obama administration over environmental regulation, as the New York Times puts it, John Broder writing at the Times. But this is what they do. See, they the right wing goes nuts because some feeble attempts are made, very feeble attempts are made to keep all of us breathing a little bit longer and keep the planet spinning a little bit longer. So these rancid sons of bitches seize on something like a guy making never mind. We'll be right back.
Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
Before the hour, this hour is being sponsored by Nurse Talk Radio, where laughter is the best medicine. The show is sponsored by over 200,000 nurses, commonly known as the National Nurses United and Massachusetts Nurses Association. Oh, Patty writes, and did we tell you it's really funny and edgy too? You can find us at Nurse Talk Site. Site is spelled S-I-T-E, nursetalksite.com. Check us out. And thanks for keeping us on pins and needles every show. Just a quick question. Do you have a blood pressure cuff in your studio? Might want to invest in one. We love you. Thank you, Patty. Nurse Talk Radio. I had not heard of that. Gonna have to check this out. nursetalksite.com. So anyway, Al Armendariz, is that it? The senior EPA official in Texas is forced to resign. Lisa Jackson accepted his resignation on Monday. Lisa Jackson said, quote, I respect the difficult decision he made and his wish to avoid distracting from the important work of the agency, end quote. We're all grateful, and that's not end of the quote. She went on, we're all grateful for Dr. Armendariz's service to EPA and to our nation. Oh, please. Now, here's what happened. Senator James Inhofe, a pig from Oklahoma, who refers to the EPA in a number of ways, but he hates the EPA. James Inhofe wants to die breathing carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide. He wants to die eating genetically modified food. He wants to die because he can't breathe, because there are carcinogens in everything he touches, everything he drinks, everything he eats. And until that day comes, Inhofe is going to label the EPA as being out of touch with reality. So He brought attention to the video posted on YouTube of Dr. Armendariz speaking to local business and government leaders in 2010. In the video, the doctor discussed his approach to enforcing regulations on fracking, hydraulic fracturing, and oil and gas extraction. And in the video, he acknowledged that his language might be a little crude, but he said that it captured the deterrent effect he was seeking. Now, this is where intelligent people go wrong. You can say that and then go ahead and give your example to other intelligent thinking people, but you cannot do it with right-wingers, with Republicans, with teabaggers, with these dumb bastards who do not understand anything bordering on subtle. They only understand hammers and nails. That's it. If you get into subtlety or metaphor, they're completely lost and they take you literally because they are stupid, stupid, stupid. And their religious leaders and their political leaders taught them to be that way. Be stupid. Everything in the Bible is absolutely true. It is inerrant. If the Bible says if whales swallowed Jonah, by God, the whale swallowed Jonah. Metaphor my ass. That's the word of God. You see? So here's what the guy said. It is kind of like how the Romans used to conquer villages in the Mediterranean. They'd go into a little Turkish town somewhere and they'd find the first five guys they saw and they'd crucify them. Then that little town was real easy to manage for the next few years. And so you make examples out of people who are, in this case, not complying with the law. You find people who are not complying with the law and you hit them as hard as you can and you make examples out of them. There's a deterrent effect there. End quote. Now, the dumbasses in our society, and they are legion, they're all right-wingers, Inhofe and the rest of these thugs, and then you have this clutch of cackling chickens and cowards over at the Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization, and all the little feeder blogs all around that scratches through the chicken droppings to find things to send to the right-wing pundits and broadcasters, and they come up with this. And so then the pressure begins. He said, crucify! He wants to nail people on crosses like our dear Savior. Oh, my God, this guy's got to go. What does he want to do? Crucify the people who own the oil companies? He does, doesn't he? This is what they do. Now, at this point, an adult would stand up and say, oh, sit down and shut your goddamn mouth. Or make them go stand in the corner for acting like two-year-olds. But the Democratic Party is terrified of these swine. And I don't know why. They all ought to be pantsed. Jim Inhofe ought to be stopped in a hallway someplace by a bunch of environmentalists and take his pants off and let him run around the rest of the day in his drawers. That'll straighten him out, wouldn't it? Crucify him, for Christ's sake. Obama appointed Dr. Armendariz as regional administrator in late 2009. He'd been a professor of environmental and civil engineering at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, a consultant to a national environmental group, a local activist, and an industry chemical engineer. Way, way too much intelligence there for Republicans, for right-wingers, for some piece of human dreck like Jim Inhofe. Way too much intelligence. Way too many credentials packed into one man. Oh, my God, yeah, but does he go to church? But this is how it works. You have this echo chamber in this country that is run by the dumbest bastards that ever got together in an echo chamber. I don't know how else to put it. It starts at the top with the pig man and Beck and all the little imitators, Hannity and well, you know who they are, Bortz, the rest of them. Then it's all funneled and filtered through the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization. And then it works its way down the food chain till you get to the cockroaches. These are these little creatures that scurry around the internet. write their blogs and put videos up. And you know, this goes on and on. And until these hellraisers raise the wrong kind of hell, and then I guess the Obama administration has to have them offed. Isn't that the rumor about Breitbart, that he was assassinated by somebody in the Obama administration? Oh, my God. But this is how it works in the U.S. now. And again, rather than the Democrats or the few intelligent people we have left in this country, in the political system, just saying to these little turkeys, these little whiners, these little cowards, you know, sit down and shut up, or you're going to get pantsed, or we're going to wash your mouth out with soap, or we're going to take away your permission to go to a Sunday matinee movie. Sit down, you little punks. No, they don't do that. Lisa Jackson calls Barack Obama, says, okay, we got another problem. The guy used the word crucify. What? Yeah, I used the word crucify. Oh, my God. Tell him to resign. But, Mr. President, he was trying to make, I don't care. We're dealing with right-wingers. They don't understand nuance, subtlety, metaphor, irony. These are Bible thumpers. I get your point, Mr. President. And very quickly, the resignation is tendered, and that's it. Wow. Wow. Regarding what the head of the Lawyers Guild, National Lawyers Guild, said, this is from Think Progress, Tara Culp Resfer, not pterodactyl, but Tara Culp Resfer wrote this yesterday. A federal judge has ordered Oakland's police department to submit a plan to address numerous unresolved complaints regarding their handling of the Occupy Oakland protests. The judge warned that failure to comply within a week could lead to sanctions. The district judge, his name is Felton Henderson, the mandate comes just a day after the release of a report by an outside monitor that concluded Oakland police used, quote, an overwhelming military-type response, end quote, to Occupy's demonstrations. This is the first official report to confirm Occupy Oakland's struggles against police brutality. The Oakland Police Department has received more than 1,000 misconduct complaints since the Occupy protests began, most which have become backlogged. The department has been under court-ordered external monitoring and review since 2003, after four officers were accused of planting evidence, fabricating police reports, and using excessive force. This federal judge's mandate sets strict guidelines for the department to clean up its act while continuing to comply with the reforms that stemmed from that 2003 case. We'll be right back.
Prophesize with your pen and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win. For the time,
Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun?
He's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Nurse Talk Radio. Sent in by Patty Lockhart. Nurse Talk Radio, where laughter is the best medicine. They are sponsoring this hour of the Mike Malloy Show. Patty writes, our show is sponsored by over 200,000 nurses, commonly known as National Nurses United, and the Massachusetts Nurses Association. Yeah, we've had them on the air, didn't we? Yeah. Patty writes, oh, and did we tell you it's really funny and edgy, too? Nurse Talk Radio. You can find us at nursetalksite.com, nursetalksite.com. Check us out, and thanks for keeping us on Pins and Needles every show. Just a quick question. Do you have a blood pressure cuff in your studio? Not to worry, Patty.
Okay.
Just kidding. The other night when we were talking about fascism and Republicans and Democrats, Prairie 2 sent this in. I never got to it. He says, it's impossible to find a Democrat, except the Democrats in name only, who believe in the fascism that Republicans want. Democrats suffer from the ignorance that has been enforced by the corporate establishment for 40 years. They are also guilty of believing in the compromise fairy. They have accepted that halfway between right and wrong is truth. Today, many are catching on, but find it difficult to overcome the power arrayed against them by Citizens United and a public ignorant of the facts. Yeah, I don't believe. I think he was taking issue with what I said. I said the Republicans are fascists, the Democrats are corporatists. And Prairie, too, has made it very clear that he is, definitely not in agreement with everything on this program. Well, most people are not and shouldn't be, absolutely. But I'm going to stay with it anyway, I don't believe Democrats, for the most part, are as fascist in their approach to government as every single right-winger is. They're getting there, I guess, but right-wingers... are blockheads. They're just too damn stupid and ignorant to be anything but fascists. You know, to be a small d Democrat or a democratic socialist or a socialist or I mean, just go down the list, a parliamentarian of whatever form of government you want. You have to be able to think, unless you're right-winger. If you're right-winger, the only thing that works for you is fascism. You need to have a strong Stalin or Hitler, and don't tell me Stalin wasn't a fascist. You need to have a strong leader who will kill you if you don't do exactly what the state tells you to do. This is the only thing that teabaggers and right-wingers understand. They talk about freedom and liberty and so on and so forth. That's nonsense. They wouldn't know liberty if it came up and bit them on their ass. They are antithetical to liberty. They are opposed to freedom. I mean, look at their positions on everything. it's just insane. And they are led by the kind of people who will lead them eventually, I hope, over a cliff. You know, the Becks and the Limbaughs and the rest of these clowns. But, anyway, that was the point I thought I was making, but Prairie 2 is convinced that that's not really the case. And that's fine. Oh, by the way, do you know there's another Russian-U.S. Cold War in the works? You heard about this? Russia's top military officer has threatened to carry out a preemptive strike on U.S.-led NATO missile defense facilities in Eastern Europe if the Obama administration goes ahead with this plan to build a missile shield. You know, the thing they talked about during the Bush years, and Obama picked it up. President Dmitry Medvedev said last year that Russia will retaliate militarily if it doesn't reach an agreement with the U.S. and NATO on this defense system, missile defense system. Today, the chief of the general staff, Nikolai Makarov, went even further. He said, quote, a decision to use destructive force preemptively will be taken if the situation worsens, end quote. He said that at an international conference attended by senior U.S. and NATO officials. So he said it right to their faces. And Russian Defense Minister Anatoly Serdyakov also warned today that talks between Moscow and Washington on the topic are, quote, close to a dead end, end quote. Now, you know, this is the idea that we're going to put missiles all over Eastern Europe, a missile defense system all over Eastern Europe, and it's only because of the Iranians. Yes, only because, right. And, you know, the Russians are saying, no, we want the ability to launch against you without a missile defense system this close to us. If we decide, either preemptively or in a retaliatory way, to launch all of our nuclear weapons against you, we don't want a bunch of damn missile defense systems in the way. And, of course, the United States' position is we want to make sure that if we decide to launch preemptorily against you, that any missiles that you launch in retaliation will have a good chance of being, we'll have advance notice, or we'll try to shoot them down, or pee on them so they all go out like matches or something. I mean, it's just like little boys, isn't it? I mean, it's the same thing. This is madness. Like the Russia and the United States are now threatening each other with missile talk. Huh? Missile talk. You thought this was over, right? You thought this was all over, right? No. Now, there's a conference coming up in Chicago. What, in a week or two? A NATO conference? Right? Or is it a month? I don't know. It's coming up soon. And there's all kinds of things going on in Chicago about that conference, by the way. Snipers on the walls. And I mean, really, it's really a hoo-hoo, hoo-ha. But the Russians are finally, they're just making their case very plain. If you put the missile defense system in place, we will preemptorily take it out. You know, this is like the Israelis threatened to take out the Iranian nuclear facilities, like the United States under the Bush crime family threatened to take out an entire country because of imaginary weapons of mass destruction. So now it's the Russians' turn. If you build them, we'll destroy them. Oh, my. We'll be right back. Think of this. Seven past the hour. Welcome back to the Malloy program. Oh my goodness, yet again, this hour is being sponsored by the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. The message is written by Hugo Alvarda and Kath in Canada. Here's the message. When we feel alone and everyone around us is obviously missing the big picture, it's very comforting to relax and listen to Mike rant about the big picture. We support Mike because he is informed, witty, and relevant. But more than that, we are scared as hell about a world without his progressive voice. Well, that's very nice. That's almost like a song. When we feel alone and everyone around us is obviously missing the big picture. Thanks, Hugo and Kath and everybody in the Malloy and Skype chat room. You can get in there, too, if you want to. Go to MikeMalloy.com, and you'll see it. Just register and go in. And we have, I'll just tell you right now, for you trolls, we have some pretty strong monitors in there. So if you mess up, your ass will be banned for all eternity. So if you want to go there, mind your manners. Better yet, don't. When we feel alone and everyone around us is obviously missing the big picture. That's great. Thanks to the Malloy and Skype chat rooms for the sponsorship. And thanks to Hugo and Kath in Canada. Thanks. Thanks very much. You want to hear some Andrew Breitbart garbage? This is from Crooks and Liars, I think. The conspiracy theory about his death just got juicier. After Breitbart died suddenly of heart failure on March 1st, it didn't take long for internet conspiracy right-wing half-ass loony theorists to accuse President Barack Obama of murdering him. Now, a recent Los Angeles Times report that Michael Cormier, an L.A. County forensic technician, may have died due to arsenic poisoning, has reignited the conspiratorial fire. Because Cormier died on April 20th, the same day as the release of Breitbart's autopsy. Ah! It's also Hitler's birthday. I wonder how that ties in. Law enforcement sources told the Times that the presence of poison in Cormier does not necessarily point to a homicide, as the substance may have entered his system by accident. However, police haven't ruled out foul play. And by the way, why do they call it foul play? Somebody gets murdered. Hey, that looks like foul play to me. Play? Jesus. And Cormier's cause of death has been deferred pending further tests. Now, listen up. Even if Cormier was murdered, there's one major flaw in using it for the conspiracy theory that Obama offed Breitbart and is now covering his own tracks. L.A. County Coroner's Assistant Chief Ed Winter said that Cormier did not conduct Breitbart's autopsy. Chief Winter said that, quote, only doctors, end quote, ever worked on Breitbart because the death was believed to have been from natural causes all along. Still, this hasn't stopped right-wing half-asses from having a field, especially these right-wing cockroaches that run the blogs. Oh, my God, what a nest of vermin. They're having a field day with the salacious poison detail, as evident from Alex Jones in the InfoWars video. And it's available there at the site. InfoWars is one of the blogs that, from the start, reported the conspiratorial connection that Breitbart's death occurred right before he was about to release video footage of Obama as a college student at a Harvard rally. Oh my God. Really? A college student at a Harvard rally? Well, that's damning. Breitbart had said that the footage was proof that Obama is an advocate of, quote, racial division and class warfare, end quote. The video was released a few days after Breitbart went down to meet Satan, but there really wasn't anything there. It was just, well, a college student at a Harvard rally. Oh, my God. Hold on just a second. Hello? Hell? Hell? Come on, answer. Pick up the blower. Oh, hi. Hello, old Scratch. How you doing? Really? Rough day? What? Andy again? Trying to take over? Well, you know how to handle that, don't you? You're kidding. You're kidding. Well, I guess he is. I'll tell you what, it won't be too long before you'll get Glenn Beck. So when you have the two of them, that ought to be, huh? You already have plans for Beck? Oh, really? Do you want to give me a little flash here? A hint of when that'll be, huh? Oh, you never reveal that information. Wow, you tease. All right, talk to you later, old Scratch. Adios. Wow, really? He's already picked a date for Beck? Wow. Oh, man. man. I don't know. Maybe after the show tonight, I'll call back down there and find out if I can weasel any information. You want to hear some more right-wing crazy? Remember the West Virginia Republican Senate candidate John Raese, R-A-E-S-E, who has compared smoking bans to forcing Jews to wear the Star of David under Hitler? Remember that guy? He made another reference to Nazism Saturday when he was talking about President Barack Obama's stance on child labor. Raese, who's campaigning against Democratic Senator Joe Manchin, who isn't much of a Democrat, really. But this freak, Raese, said at a Saturday event, quote, Barack, why don't you just call him boy? Better yet, Mr. Raese, why don't you just call him black boy? Huh? Barack wants to stop all children from working on the farm. Can you imagine this? I can't. I can't fathom it. Did you ever think we'd grow up in America and see something like that? Let me take it one step further. He wants to disallow the 4-H from training children to work on a farm. Yavol! Yavol? Now, that isn't necessarily a Nazi term. It's a German equivalent of yes, sir, used in military context, but it is commonly associated with a German dictator, especially when combined with Mein Führer! Jawohl, mein Führer! Oh, I didn't know Obama wants to disallow the 4-H from training children to work on a farm? Really? Oh, my goodness, damn! Where do these people come from? Satan farts, and you get somebody like this guy, this West Virginia Republican Senate candidate, John Raese. Hi, I'm here.
The 20 years of boredom for trying to change the system from within. I'm coming now, I'm coming to reward them. First,
cuddle up, truth seekers. Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. John Raese. Raese, of course.
Barack wants to stop all children from working on the farm. Can you imagine that? I can't fathom that.
Oh, my God. Regarding the missile defense system, Thomas writes, Russia's objection to missile defense is also like Kennedy's response to Russian missiles in Cuba during the early 60s. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good comparison. And Bruce writes, regarding the Ruskies and missile defense, my guess is that if the Russians are really worried about this deployment, since anti-missile missiles don't work, it's the high-power radar system right on their border that has them freaked out. The ability to track all aircraft is one thing, but such a system could be used offensively. It could make useless Russia's own radar systems if the U.S. was going to do a first strike, as Bush was promoting. Submarine-launched U.S. ICBMs were refitted with ground burst capability. Now, that was against treaties, but Bush simply reneged on treaties. And the ability to take out Russian command and control as well as missiles before a response could be launched And all of that has put Mr. Putin on edge. It's just great. This is just goddamn madness. This is asylum level stuff, isn't it? I mean, how often do you listen to this program, Truth Seeker, and not come away thinking either I'm crazy or that these things that I bring up on the program, which, you know, I don't create them out of, you know, the mist. I mean, these are things being done and thought about and discussed and so on and so forth. Just like the Fukushima disaster. You know, the more I read about that, the more I just kind of, I don't know, just sit here stunned. Stunned. You know, it was over a year ago. And, I mean, the truth of all this, the Japanese government is like the Russian government. Hell, the Russians the Soviets didn't say anything about Chernobyl. Until, was it Norwegians? All of a sudden, they picked up, you know, their Geiger counters or radiation detection devices just went berserk off the charts. Was it Norway, Sweden, someplace, Finland, and the Russians? Oh yeah, well, we had a fire. Not to worry. And the Japanese and Three Mile Island, the Americans. Of course, the American nuclear industry lies all the time. Everything that is said by people who speak for the U.S. nuclear industry is a goddamn lie. Every single sentence they put together is a tissue paper thin parade of lies. But, you know, nobody challenges it. The anti-nuke movement, environmental movement, they challenge it. And then you have somebody like this freak from West Virginia say, "Oh, you know, they're going to kill the 4-H. Or you have somebody like the EPA administrator in Texas that has to resign because he said, "You know, I'll tell you how to get these bastards to comply with the law. You know, the Roman Jews do, they go into a village and, you know, in Turkey somewhere, and they're going to conquer the village. They take 4 or 5 guys out and crucify them. Everybody else will behave." Ooh, crucify. That's what they did to our Lord and Savior, Jeebus. Can't have that kind of talk. No, no, no. Quick, quick, quick. Resign, resign, resign. Where was I? But, you know, looking at these topics, and I know you do. I know anybody that listens to this program also uses the net widely. And while I agree that 90% of what you find on the internet is hog hockey, but the other 10%, which is a vast mountain of material, is not. It's, you know, fairly truthful and honest and straightforward and so on and so on. But the whole Fukushima thing, you know, the spent fuel rods are just sitting there kind of, are they sitting there kind of boiling? Is it like a pot of tea? Is that what it is? That's scary. I mean, if you really stop it, I made the mistake last night after the program of going upstairs and fixing a cup of this tea that we're drinking now. Life change. Life change tea. And I'm sitting there sipping this stuff thinking, you know, this is a good thing that I'm doing for myself. And then I started thinking about Fukushima. I thought, oh my God. And I could, you know, I couldn't, I had to switch over to had to go, actually get in bed and start watching Turner Classic movies. What was that I was watching last night? You remember? Huh? That's right, you were asleep. We'll be right back.
Bob,
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. The message that comes with the sponsorship written by Hugo Alvarda and Kath in Canada. Here's the message. When we feel alone and everyone around us is obviously missing the big picture, it's very comforting to relax and listen to Mike rant about the big picture. We support Mike because he is informed, witty, and relevant, but more than that, we are scared as hell about a world without his progressive voice. Well, thanks, guys and girls. I appreciate it very, very much. The Malloy and Skype chat rooms, written by Hugo and Kath. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Did you like the singing, guys? Girls? No, I know. Don't. Phone lines are open if you want to call in. 877-996-2556. There was another thing here, another quickie email from Bruce regarding why the right buys the torture crap. And, of course, the right-wingers will never know any peace. Bruce writes, the right buys into the idea that torture will bring instant confessions because they are sniveling cowards, right-wingers. They would never be in a position to be tortured for information because they are cowards. If they were being tortured, they would spill all they knew immediately. They don't understand that people who actually volunteer for hazardous duty have enough presence of mind to lie to their torturers. Knowing that they're already dead gives them peace that the coward will never know. And as the saying goes, a brave man dies but once. A right-winger dies a thousand deaths. Oh, one last thing, then we'll go to your phone calls here. They talk about madness in Florida. This crazed, almost felon, Rick Scott, has decided he will allow guns at the Republican National Convention in Tampa, despite pleas from Tampa City officials to temporarily ban the state's lenient laws at the RNC convention. I say bring them. I say, hey, listen, you right-wingers, if you're a delegate, if you sons of bitches don't show up with multiple clip magazines and all, I mean, just, I want to see great big irons on your hip, boys. I want to see you carrying in the semis and the fullies and everything. By God, this political, hell, there might be a liberal loose in there. And if you see something ducking around, just open fire. Just open fire, goddammit. Maybe 30 or 80 or 1,000 of you people would just open fire on each other. Wouldn't that be a glorious moment? Woo-hoo! Rick Scott says the Second Amendment. Second Amendment. He wrote a letter to Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn, and letter obtained by the Tampa Bay Times. Rick says, quote, it's unclear how disarming law-abiding citizens would better protect them from the dangers and threats posed by those who would flout the law. It is at just such times that the constitutional right to self-defense is most precious and must be protected from government overreach. Yeehaw. Yeah. Oh, man, I'm all for it. Oh, Jesus, God in heaven. Yes. Yes. First thing Rick Scott has done as governor that I applaud. I'm standing. I'm clapping. I'm going. That's great, Rick. Yes. Now, all you delegates and you ladies too, arm yourselves. God damn it. There might be a, I don't know. Something's going to happen down there. I'll guarantee you. There's going to be trouble. You might as well be armed so you can shoot the trouble dead. Right? Come on. Lock and load. Come on, boys and girls. Woo! Councilwoman Lisa Monteleone argued last week, Tampa City Council, she said, we feel it's necessary and prudent to ban guns in order to prevent a tragedy. Nah. The mayor said, quote, in the potentially contentious environment surrounding the RNC, a firearm unnecessarily increases the threat of imminent harm and injury to the residents and visitors of the city, end quote. Well, I'll tell you what, folks. All you Tampa residents, just stay inside. Don't go anywhere. You're going to have thousands of armed psychopaths all together in one place. And they all stink and they all burp and fart. And somebody's going to do something. It's going to piss somebody off. And they're going to stand their ground and they're going to open fire. And when I hear about it, open your window. I don't care if you're Kath in Canada or Reg in New York. I don't care where you are. Open your window. Because when those people start shooting each other, you're going to hear my ass cheering all the way from the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. I'll be hanging out my head. Hell, I might even fire a couple of rounds off in sympathy with her. Bang, 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 bang. Yee-hoo! God, that makes me happy just thinking about it. Just thinking about it. Armed delegates at the RNC. Glory. Hallelujah. Rick, bless you. Bless you. In the letter, Governor Scott insists protesters and convention attendees will be safe, pointing to a security plan that already bans guns in the convention center and a safe zone run by the Secret Service. Really? Rick said, quote, we have had political conventions in this country since the dawn of the republic. They are essential means of furthering our constitutional rights of free speech and to vote. Our fundamental right to keep and bear arms has coexisted with these freedoms for just as long, and I see no reason to depart from that tradition this year. Oh, damn, neither do I, Rick. Come on, folks, load up. Ah, damn. Bring a couple six guns. I mean, stick them in your belt, your pants, your armpit. Put them in your briefcase, under your funny-looking little old boater hat. You know what I'm talking about. Stick a couple down inside your shoe. Maybe one between the crack, or, you know, just stick them all over your body. Yee! And then watch out. Because, man... Matt is in St. Louis, listening on XM. Matt?
Yeah?
Yeah, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks.
Sure.
Hey, I kind of feel that a lot of the problems in the United States is people just don't want to take responsibility for their own actions.
Now, what do you mean by that, Matt?
Well, I mean, someone, you know, decides to go to college, and they take out a bunch of loans, and they, you know...
Goodbye, Matt! Have a nice evening. Go back to playing with yourself in the dark. Oh, my God. Oh. Well, you know, you take out a bunch of loans, and... Jesus, where do these people come from? Listen, let me say it again, Matt, and all you right-wing cockroaches. I can smell you. But as soon as you open your mouth, wow, doesn't seem like people take responsibility. Oh, yeah? What do you mean by that? And you're already pegged. I mean, you're transparent. All you right-wingers are just transparent. I mean, you're like... These Portuguese men of war jellyfish that hang out there you know, just far enough offshore to sting the living hell out of surfers. And there you just kind of hang in your existence, and you're transparent, except for that little mass in the center of you. But, so don't try. I mean, come on. Come on. Oi. Lawrence is in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on XM. Hello, Lawrence.
Yes, sir. How are you doing? You know what? I'm actually afraid for democracy, especially if we get a knucklehead like Romney in office. And I'll tell you why. And it's not so much the problem with Romney is that, and you kind of alluded to this in the first part of your show, is that the Democrats are so dang weak. We're scared. Anytime a Republican says something, the Democrats cow down and placate these guys when they shouldn't be doing it. Now, here's a scenario that's going to happen when this continues. And this hypothetical, this is just a hypothetical. I hope Barack gets in, but let's say he doesn't. As soon as Romney gets in, the stocks will go up because all of the fat cats that have been holding their money back would now say, oh, we finally got a president that kind of looks like what a president's supposed to look like. So I feel a little more secure now. Now, as soon as that gets out, now these...
You're disappearing, Lawrence. Lawrence!
Can you hear me?
There you are. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's kind of a bad connection here.
Uh-huh.
Well, I kind of hope my point. I hope my point is there. Well, I'll just make it quick. Well, you have these guys at Fox trying to say, see, that's what we need is somebody in office like that. And instead of the Democrats, no, this is not right.
Lawrence, I'm real sorry, man, but you keep.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Get locked and loaded and going down there to the Republican convention.
Yee!
Ah, ooh. Have I mentioned that this hour has been sponsored by the Malloy? This hour has been sponsored by the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. And the message is written by Hugo Alvarda and Kath in Canada. The message, when we feel alone and everyone around us is obviously missing the big picture, it's very comforting to relax and listen to Mike rant about the big picture. We support Mike because he's informed, witty, and relevant. Ooh, you left out extremely handsome. He is informed, witty, and relevant, but more than that, we are scared as hell about a world without his progressive voice. Thanks, guys and girls in the Malloy chat room, the Skype chat room, and to Hugo and Kath in Canada. Thanks, 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 thanks. Informed, witty, and relevant. Woo! All right, where are we? Lawrence is in Lansing, Michigan, listening on XM. Hello, Lawrence.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, my brother, hey, hey, you know, Mike, I'm going to tell you, it's getting to the point where I'm so frustrated with this whole political rigmarole. You know, it's getting to the point where, you know, it's like, damn, let me out the country. You know, I don't even, you know, I'm going to be honest with you.
I know.
I got to say something to all these black listeners, and I got to say something to all the liberals. I've been a Democrat. Third generation. Right to the point. I'm so damn tired of all these black people and white people praising Obama. But you know, here's the thing, Mike.
Yeah.
If we all be realistic, the only difference between Bush and Obama is Bush made sure all the money went to one faction of millionaires and billionaires in this country. Damn if Obama ain't doing the same. Mm. Now, you know, If we gonna be real, Mike, I'm a product of affirmative action. I hired in General Motors in '76.
I've always worked the CETA programs. That's the Comprehensive Employment Training Act.
Oh, I remember CETA. Yeah, I got some CETA money at one time.
All right then, Mike, so tell me. If you're going to spend $2 billion or so a week in Afghanistan, and you ain't going to put them billions in the inner city, where black people are dying, Hispanics are dying, poor white people are dying, if you ain't going to do nothing for us, the masses, mm-hmm. how the hell can you say you're any different from Bush?
You can't. You really can't. And it's just that Obama is very eloquent. He's a great talker. He has the rhythm down, the kind of rhythm that goes on in your head when you're listening to a speaker. I mean, you've heard people like Romney. Romney makes me feel like I'm getting dizzy and then I'm going to get nauseous because he doesn't know how to talk. Obama knows how to talk. Bush didn't know how to talk. Kennedy knew how to talk. Some of these people know how to talk. But and Obama does that. Obama is hypnotic. I could listen to Obama read the damn phone book to me and on television. I'd feel like, wow. But 5 minutes later, it's like Chinese food. You know, 5 minutes later, you're hungry again. Well, with Obama, 5 minutes later, I'm still going, well, wait a second. He's talking the talk, and I love to hear it, but there's no walk in the walk. So, I hear what you're saying, Lawrence. I do.
But think about this. Back in February this year, February 25th, I was invited to the Republican breakfast that they held here for Romney here in Lansing. Now, I met the man, I watched him speak, and you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I was looking at a millionaire. I knew what I was looking at. I understood what he was saying, where he was coming from, because I understood who he is, where he come from. When you look at Obama, you got to look at where he come from. Obama is right off the block. Now, come on now. When you meet somebody right off the block, you know they're going to fast-talk you. You know they're going to dazzle you. Why are all these black people and everybody not looking at him like a politician and quit looking at him like the new savior? He's just a black man, but he's a politician first. You know, hold him to the same standard that we hold everybody else to. That's all I want to see. Ask him them critical questions. Why ain't he putting money in the inner city? Why ain't he doing some training? He talk it, but he don't put nothing behind it. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of hearing it, and I'm tired of seeing it, and I don't think I'm going to vote for the man again. Personally, I won't vote at all. They're both of them cut from the same coin.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I've got to admit that I feel essentially the same way, but Obama is not unique in his turning his back on folks in this country who really need help. George Bush did, Bill Clinton did, Pappy Bush did, Reagan did, Jimmy Carter did. I mean, we keep going back and back and back, and until finally you get back around Lyndon Johnson. He did some things for poor people, but that's just the way it is in the system. And I agree with you that Obama is no different. He's a politician. His skin color is totally irrelevant. He is a politician. And I think people who understand that, like you do, like I do, like a lot of people do, I think there's a lot of us who really don't see a skin color anymore. I think I've gotten to that point, and I consider that a good thing for me. But he is a politician first, last, and always. And he's made history. Because of his race, he's made history. He will be in the history books forever. And I think what he, having made history, I said this before, after the 2010 elections when the Republicans won so much because of the crazy people in this country, I think Obama at that point should have said, all right, I'll tell you what. I'm not going to run for re-election. I'm going to be a one-term president. And then just come out smoking and kicking ass. I mean, just kicking ass. But he didn't do that because that's not his style. Lawrence, we got to talk again, but not right now because I got to go. Thank you, man. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. hour. This hour is being sponsored by Howard Crombie. And, well, let me just read what he wrote here. Tomorrow, May 4th, remember the Haymarket Massacre in 1884 when the Chicago police killed four demonstrators at a rally in favor of the eight-hour workday, and which led to the hanging of four anarchists. Also tomorrow, May 4th, remember Kent State, 1970, when the Ohio National Guard killed four and wounded nine students at an anti-war protest. And tomorrow and every day, remember the words of Martin Luther King Jr., quote, let no man pull you so low as to hate him, end quote. Yeah, I wish I could live that one, but it's difficult. The Haymarket Massacre, Kathy and I were in Chicago when the Haymarket Martyrs Monument was listed in the National Register of Historic Places, designated as a National Historic Landmark. That was on February 18th, 1997. And the Haymarket Affair refers to the aftermath of a bombing that took place at a labor demonstration on Tuesday, May 4th, 1888, at Haymarket Square in Chicago. All this courtesy of Wikipedia. It began as a peaceful rally in support of workers who were striking for an eight-hour day. An unknown person threw a dynamite bomb at police as the police acted to disperse the public meeting. Now, back in the day, dispersing a public meeting on the street, back in 1884, meant wading into the crowd with truncheons and clubs and just beating people to the ground, and when they were on the ground, continuing to beat them until they were senseless. That's what crowd control consisted of then. Anyway, the bomb blast resulted in gunfire. Seven cops were killed, four civilians. Scores of people were wounded. The legal proceedings that followed were publicized around the globe, and at the trials, eight anarchists were convicted of conspiracy. Now, anarchist is the term that was used, excuse me, by the authorities and by the people being charged. Anarchy, of course, meant demonstrating in favor of workers' rights. Anyway, eight anarchists were convicted of conspiracy, even though the prosecution conceded that none of the people on trial had thrown the bomb. Seven of the eight were sentenced to death. One was sentenced to a term of 15 years in prison. The death sentences of two of the defendants were commuted by Illinois Governor Richard Oglesby, committed to terms of life in prison. Another committed suicide in jail rather than face hanging. And the other four were hanged on November 11th, 1887. And then in 1893, Illinois' new governor, John Peter Altgeld, pardoned the remaining defendants and criticized the trial. The argument has been made by people a lot more aware of this than I could ever be, that the four men who were hanged were innocent. As charged, they were guilty of participating in demonstrations demanding an eight-hour workday for workers rather than 12 to 16 hours. 8 hours. Well, for that you get hanged. So the 1% has always operated in this country, haven't they? We're certainly operating then. The Haymarket Affair is generally considered significant as the origin of International May Day, just in case you want a connection. The May Day observances for workers. So, anyway, thank you, Howard, for the memory jog, and thanks for the sponsorship. We went to see that, Kathy and I, when it was designated a National Historical Monument out in Lake, where was it? Lake Forest? I don't even remember. Forest Park. Haymarker's Martyrs Monument. Remember that? We went out to see it that day, and Martyrs Monument in Forest Park, which I think is just outside of Cook County, into Lake County, I think. Anyway, thanks, Howard. Excuse me. Last night, one of the things that I focused on was this urgent request to UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon from Japanese diplomats, scientists, civil organizations, and a huge chunk of the Japanese public, an appeal to the United Nations to please, please help where it concerns the situation at the Fukushima Daiichi Unit 4 spent nuclear fuel pool, where the contained within that pool is the equivalent of 10 times the amount of radioactive cesium-137 that was released at the time of the Chernobyl nuclear accident. Also, the spent fuel assemblies contain roughly 85 times more long-lived radioactivity than released at Chernobyl. And the situation is getting unmanageable, both from a propaganda point of view, which is what the Japanese government has been doing, as all governments would. They're lying through their teeth. But it's becoming unmanageable as a public affairs issue, a PR issue, a propaganda issue. And now finally, the admission is coming out that this is a scientific issue that is going to result in massive contamination and massive death. They need help. Now, until this was sent to me, I had no idea. Do you? Do you have any idea? Every once in a while, I see something in the papers about, Fukushima. I remember that. Yeah. Well, what's this? Oh, yeah, there's another earthquake over there. Yeah, they're concerned about the containment pools that they might drain out. And if they drain out and all this stuff is exposed, it's not going to happen. You know, they'll take care of it. Right? Huh? Prairie 2 wrote me last night. He said the Russians avoided a massive discharge like this, where it concerned Chernobyl, by tunneling under the reactor at Chernobyl and pumping the shaft full of liquid nitrogen. The Japanese seem to prefer relying on the denial of reality. This sort of China syndrome meltdown will put an evolutionary change amount of radioactive material into the ocean primarily, depending on the wind flow at the time. The downside is a significant increase in cancer worldwide and the spontaneous mutation of wildlife. On the plus side, this could give us some interesting new species. Sarcasm mode on. The Japanese will be unfortunate participants in the attempt to produce a new Homo sapiens. Sarcasm mode off. I hear you, Prairie 2. I just wonder if anybody else does. Now, there's something else I want to share with you when you come back after this break. And I realize, I'm belaboring the point. We have more important things to think about than this. We have the argument between Obama and the crazed right wing about the murder of, or the execution, or the assassination, or the termination, or whatever, of, what's his name? Osama bin Laden, and blah, 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 bitty bang, bitty bang, rim shot. We have all that to talk about. Why should we talk about the possible, nuclear contamination of the Northern Hemisphere? Well, I don't know. I guess it's just how you select your topics. We'll be right back.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Dr. Mark Sirkus, S-I-R-C-U-S, wrote at theintelhub.com Monday, I believe. Yeah, Monday. He said, he writes, I wish everything I'm reporting here were not true, or at least were less true than it appears. It does seem that Japan is in the process of contaminating the entire Pacific Ocean via continued uncontrolled releases of radioactivity at Fukushima. After lowballing initial estimates of radiation releases, the Japanese authorities now acknowledge that substantial amounts of radioactive material leaked from the crippled Fukushima Daiichi reactors. The nuclear disaster in Japan has released radioactive isotopes that have poisoned the country's soil, food, and water. The fallout is being rapidly taken up by living things and passed up the food chain, with airborne radioactive isotopes reaching around the world, but especially in the northern hemisphere, where most of the radioactive particles will settle. Most Americans have no idea what is happening. But within days of the accident at Fukushima, radioactive contaminants were detected at monitoring stations in the Pacific Coast states. I don't think, Dr. Sirkus writes, I don't think anyone was really ever that happy about nuclear power and nuclear weapons, but a lot of money and power were concentrated in the nuclear industry. Many of these people are riding around in limos today, very happy with their luxurious lifestyle as the planet quickly becomes more contaminated. Private companies are abandoning ship from the nuclear industry because the nuclear news is bad, no matter how you look at it. And worse, others still in are headed for bad financial doom. According to a recent article in the Times, New York Times, the operators of 20 U.S. nuclear reactors, including some with licenses that expire soon, do not have sufficient funding to dismantle these plants. And if these reactors can't keep working, their owners intend to let them sit like industrial relics for 20 to 60 years or even longer, while interest accrues in the reactor's retirement accounts. Within the next 15 years, as many as 100 industry-standard 900-megawatt nuclear reactors concentrated in the so-called old nuclear countries will have to be decommissioned, dismantled, and made safe, which is impossible when it comes to nuclear plants and their dirty waste products. Human stupidity and arrogance has really boomeranged on us in the arena of nuclear power. It is extremely difficult and painful to entertain the thought that the future of the Northern Hemisphere, and perhaps even the habitability of the entire planet, is being brought into question. I am not a lone wolf saying this anymore, for the story has touched the edge of the mainstream now. The story of the nuclear waste pools was just published in the Huffington Post. I imagine many do read that publication, and what they read there should shake people up pretty good. The pools are 100 feet above ground and are completely open to the atmosphere because the reactor buildings were demolished by explosions. The pools could possibly topple or collapse from structural damage coupled with another powerful earthquake. As Huffington Post has written, quote, the urgency of the situation is underscored by the ongoing seismic activity where 13 earthquakes of magnitude 4.0 to 5.7 have occurred off the northeast coast of Japan between April 14th and April 17th. That's 3 days. This has been the norm since the first quake and tsunami hit the Daiichi site on March 11 last year. Larger quakes are expected closer to the power plant, continues the Huffington Post. So if an earthquake or other event were to cause this pool to drain, this could result in a catastrophic radiological fire that could wipe out most of the Northern Hemisphere. Certainly, it would be a massive civilization-breaking event, some are suggesting. Now, this is the reason I'm bringing this to this program. You know, topic selection. What are we going to talk about tonight? Oh, you want to talk about the end of the Northern Hemisphere? Nah, that's a downer. Don't you think maybe you ought to just bring it up? Okay. Now, amazingly, this is not the only nuclear situation going on. There's a new scare in Japan. I'll tell you about it when we come back. You got a real nice planet here, but you better watch your atmosphere. And you better clean your waters up. I have not for your cup. You got a real nice planet here, but you better watch your atmosphere. And you better clean your waters up. I have not for your cup. Clean me up. I wanna be abducted tonight.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's Mike Malone.
25 before the hour. So, Dr. Mark Sirkis, writing at theintelhub.com, is trying to, I get the sense that he's trying to warn us. You get the sense? Of course he is. This hour is sponsored by Howard Crombie. His message, tomorrow, May 4th, remember the Haymarket Massacre in 1884 when the Chicago police killed four demonstrators at a rally for the eight-hour day, which led to the hanging of four anarchists. Tomorrow, May 4th, remember Kent State in 1970 when the Ohio National Guard killed four and wounded nine students at an anti-war protest. And tomorrow and every day, remember the words of Martin Luther King, Jr., quote, let no man pull you so low as to hate him. All right, Japan, in addition to the horror that is developing, well, it has developed, in addition to the horror that is increasingly appearing to become part of the New World Order, the release of all this radioactivity. In addition to that, this is not the only nuclear situation going on in Japan. There's a new scare. Two blasts at a chemical plant in western Japan on 22nd of April killed one worker and injured at least 22 others. Now, I know this one you haven't heard of. The explosions and fire occurred at a factory operated by comprehensive chemical manufacturer Mitsui Chemicals in Yamaguchi Prefecture. The complex is still on fire. And supposedly, 3,379 units of radioactive waste, with 200 liters in each unit, and uranium for nuclear fuel are preserved in the site. Let me repeat that. The complex is on fire, and supposedly, reports from the Yamaguchi Prefectural Police said 3,379 units of radioactive waste, each of those units being 200 liters in volume, and uranium for nuclear fuel are preserved at this site. One of the two missing workers was found dead, nine workers injured, and three residents in the area were also injured. The prefectural government does say the depleted uranium is stored at the complex, but there has been no release of toxic materials from the fire, according to the prefectural government. On the other hand, some are saying that a cloud of depleted uranium, airborne particles, is heading toward Hawaii and the west coast of the USA. How they know that, Nobody knows. But as Dr. Sirkis writes, we have had that before when the government used depleted uranium in its Middle Eastern wars from our government. And no one said anything about it, so why would we expect it to be anything different now? You know, depleted uranium is perfectly okay. Not going to hurt a thing. Unless it gets, you know, little particles of the plutonium involved in depleted uranium. If it gets inside your body, little microscopic particles through the air or dirt or food or dust, then you will die. And if you don't die, and you have children, your child, when born, will be a massive matrix of horrific birth deformities. But we don't talk about that. We can't talk about that in the United States because where it concerns Iraq, we are totally responsible. Nobody else, us. No, this is not NATO, UN, no. This is us, and we're not going to talk about it, ever. This goes back to 91, to Bush Sr.'s war. Bush Jr.'s war in the same country was equally unconcerned about salting that part of the planet that would, allegedly was the cradle of civilization with depleted uranium, dust, explosives. We don't talk about it. And besides, if you bring it up, there is always the counter argument. Well, you know, Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. What were we supposed to do? I don't even want to have the discussion. I'm just telling you, if you don't understand about depleted uranium, then look it up. But we saturated Iraq with depleted uranium 20 years ago. And now a massive, quote, cloud, end quote, of depleted uranium particles is headed our way. So they say, you know, who knows? Maybe it's not true. So Dr. Sirkis says, are we going to wait until the emergency departments are overwhelmed with patients suffering from radiation sickness before we begin to get alarmed? In reality, he writes, we have really no idea what is actually going to happen since such events have never happened before. Not like this. And then he points out that every toxic exposure that you know, we go through, just our day-to-day lives, increases our vulnerability to radiation. Toxic accumulation, whether from heavy metals, chemicals, pesticides, food additives, preservatives, blah, 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 each takes, in its turn, its toll, weakening our resistance or ability to clear radioactive particles from our bodies. The list of these contaminants is endless. But especially telling is the tonnage of mercury put into the atmosphere each and every day by the coal-fired electrical plants around the globe. Britain's most senior accident and emergency doctor told the Telegraph of the UK that weeks of intense pressure had left casualty departments overwhelmed with patients. He said desperately sick people had been left for hours waiting on trolleys, carts, with even those requiring intensive care enduring long delays. Well, you know, his conclusion, Dr. Sirkis, and Prairie 2 pointed this out in an email I shared with you before I started this article. At Chernobyl, no spent fuel pools were destroyed. It was just an explosion and fire. And look how bad that was. No spent fuel pools were destroyed. Because, as Bruce pointed out, the Russians filled the they tunneled underneath that reactor and filled it full of liquid nitrogen, which I guess froze everything. I don't know. But Dr. Sirkis goes on. He says, we are all just beginning to grasp this danger from Fukushima. Technically, it boils down to the fact that it is the irradiated nuclear fuel stored in spent fuel pools amidst the reactor ruins that are posing the greatest danger. He says, I have people writing to me telling me that the problem is astronomically vaster than Chernobyl in both complexity and quantity of substances released, and that the total amounts of radiation being reported are way too low. Here I am, he concludes, freaking out that we are at risk for something in the order of the 85 times the radiation of Chernobyl, and I hear it could be much worse than that because of the plutonium factor. We have not only ignored the heavy metal and chemical situation, but also radiation exposure. All this adding up to a hugely perilous predicament. Well, OMFG. So what to do? What to do? Dig a hole? Do what a lot of these survivalist people are doing in the American West and Southwest, digging holes in the ground and stuffing the holes full of freeze-dried survival food and lots of guns. Because, you know, got to have those goddamn guns. Or would it make more sense to for the UN to respond? I mean, come on. Nuclear engineers in the in Russia, the United States, Germany, Japan, Brazil, where else? South Africa, where else? You know, the UK, Canada. Surely have the expertise to converge, if they have the courage, on Fukushima. And make an effort to avoid a catastrophe that you and I can't even imagine. I mean, there's no point even sitting here talking about it. It's science fiction stuff. It's, you know, like, no, I'm sorry. My brain can't contain that. I'm sorry. Never mind. I want to hear that one of the Kardashians is running for public office, maybe. No, I don't want to hear this other stuff. I got enough on my mind. You know, it's only been a year since we got Osama bin Laden. So, you know, I don't want to hear about this death of civilization crapola. I've heard about that before. What next, Malloy? You're going to walk around with one of those sandwich board signs on your back that says, the end is near, the end is near, repent. Are you going to do that? Huh? No, I'm not going to do that. We'll be right back.
Spinning crazily, the wounded knight still.
Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Howard Crombie, and in his message he reminds us that tomorrow, May 4th, is the anniversary of the Haymarket Massacre in Chicago in 1884, when police in that city killed four demonstrators, seven cops were killed, and it started out as a peaceful rally for in favor of the 8-hour workday. The aftermath led to the hanging of four anarchists who arguably were not even involved in it, but anti-labor attitudes then were brutal. And also tomorrow, May 4th, remember Kent State in 1970 when the Ohio National Guard killed four students and wounded nine others at an anti-war protest. And tomorrow and every day, remember the words of Martin Luther King Jr., quote, let no man pull you so low as to hate him, end quote. Wish I could do that one. I really, really do. But I can't. I just simply can't. I guess that's why we have people like Gandhi and King and Jesus and, you know, other pacifists. Not me. I can't do it. I can be nonviolent up to a point, I guess. I don't know. I've never really been tested. Don't want to be, frankly. Regarding that, nonviolence, Bruce also emailed, nonviolence is the only, only is effective if you have a higher authority to appeal to. Gandhi had the British public. Martin Luther King Jr. had the Northern whites and a sympathetic federal government. The German Jews had no one. And they were driven almost extinct. The G8 protesters in Seattle were beaten down in the 90s because they had no one to appeal to. The fascists believe the Occupy movement can be kept separate from the real power base, if that even still exists. And the liberal Americans of the 1770s appealed to the British Parliament and were rejected. And you know how that went. So, point taken, Bruce, that in order for nonviolence to work, there has to be a higher authority to appeal to that will observe the nonviolence and react accordingly. And maybe that's not true anymore. But I still maintain that if that's not true, then a massive show of resistance by just doing nothing would work. And by massive, it has to be on numbers that most of us are just incapable of imagining American citizens to the degree necessary to effect change would take to the streets. And I don't know if it's possible anymore. I really don't. I have no idea if any of this is possible. You know, the battle may be over. It may be completely already decided. And that any of this talk by moi or anybody else who is talking about massive resistance, peaceful resistance, may be just pointless gibberish. It could be that enough Americans have so given up and fallen into the matrix to the point where they just don't care, or they react by trying to kill or maim or wound or hurt their natural allies. I mean, when I look at these right-wing Republicans, the teabaggers, whatever you want to call them, for whom I hold nothing but contempt, and this is the massive failure on my part, and I understand that. I never claim that my tactics are productive or proper or on any level spiritual or worth a damn. They're just a gut reaction. But the natural allies, the right wingers, who are constantly being slammed over the head and made fun of while they, you know, hop around with their signs and their weaponry and their camo and their misspelled placards and, you know, calling Obama all sorts of names. I mean, Jesus Christ, this is just madness, because they should be all Americans, frankly, the 99%. And I don't know why the teabaggers don't understand that they are in the 99%. Whether they want to be there or not, they are. I mean, Jesus, why is that so hard? So the point I'm trying to get to, the American public by design has been so riven, so fractionalized, so broken into chunks that a unified front of resistance is probably impossible. So all this jibber-jabber that you hear on this program and maybe a couple others, I don't know, this jibber-jabber about resistance coming from people who have devoted their lives to studying the success or failures of mass movements, all this talk, maybe it's just frankly too late. Just, 30 years ago, it should have begun, and it didn't. So I don't know. In the meantime, we have two massive extinction-level events hanging over our heads, one of which could be unleashed tomorrow, the other of which will take a few more decades, but it's coming as surely as night follows day. So what do we do? I don't know. And I don't think you do either. So, what a bummer. What a bummer program. Jesus, what a bummer last hour. This really sucks. Sorry for bringing you down. Sorry for bringing myself down. See you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.